Welcome to the Forum on 90.5 WCBE, bringing you the conversation shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons downtown. Each week, community leaders and local voices come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, it's the state of childcare. Rising costs, workforce shortages, and limited access are putting pressure on families, employers, and the regional economy. We're digging into new research and looking at what it might take to strengthen childcare in Central Ohio for providers, parents, and kids. Joining us today are Dr. Catherine Glenn Applegate, Director of Childcare and Education Initiatives at Action for Children, Hannah Halbert, Executive Director of Policy Matters Ohio, Kara Wente, Director of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth, and Rhonda West, Owner and Administrator of Rhonda's Daycare Service. Your host is NBC4 anchor Jennifer Bullock. We begin with opening remarks by Tasha Booker, CEO of Action for Children. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, The State of Childcare.
I want to thank Holly for your service and for coming back to Action for Children. If I could just take a moment of pride to thank the entire Action for Children board today and those who showed up, would you please stand? We do have a couple brave men on our board, but I do want to just acknowledge the powerful women on this stage and in this audience. And I also want to acknowledge the Action for Children team who work every day to make this work possible for thousands of kids in our community. Would you all stand? And those watching back at home office. If you represent the nonprofit sector, please stand. You truly are our unsung heroes, especially during a time like this. So thank you for your service. And lastly, to our child care community, our early childhood education community, would you please stand? Thank you. You truly are the workforce behind the workforce. I'm going to start today with a quote. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. I want to thank the CMC for continuing to hold up these very difficult and challenging conversations, even when it's most uncomfortable or inconvenient. I'm so proud to be a member of the CMC today. So thank you, CMC, for holding this crucial conversation. So I'm honored to be here today, not just as the CEO of Action for Children, but as a mother of an 18-year-old, I'll soon be an empty nester. Thank you. I'll give myself a pat on the back here. But an advocate, a lifelong resident of this community. I'm a proud Buckeye. I was born and raised here, and I never left. I care deeply about the future of Central Ohio and that all of our neighbors get to experience the boom in this boom town we call our region. It is also encouraging to see all of you here in support of childcare and early childhood education and workforce behind the workforce. At Action for Children, we work directly with over 1,200 licensed childcare providers across our 7 counties. And we listen closely to what they are telling us. That is what this report is all about. In its 7th edition, Action for Children sends its Central Ohio Care Provider Survey out to all licensed providers in the Central Ohio region. Responses were collected representing over a quarter of the surveyed population. When we talk about the state of childcare, we're not talking about a one-sided issue. The crisis of affordability affects parents and providers alike. When parents can't afford childcare, they are either forced to reduce working hours or leave the workforce entirely. And when that happens, providers lose enrollment and dollars. To quote a Franklin County provider, My greatest concern about the future of childcare is parents not being able to afford childcare, and us providers not being able to pay our bills as expenses increase. These small businesses, who are already operating on the thinnest of margins, these small businesses who are already operating on the thinnest of margins are at risk of closure. What we really are talking about are the workforce and economic issues facing Central Ohioans. It's an issue of whether parents can go to work, whether employees can retain businesses, whether children have safe, nurturing places to learn and grow during the most critical years of their lives. These are all false choices. Right now, the state of childcare in Central Ohio is fragile. But we do know solutions exist, and there are people right here in this room who can be a part of it. Government can't do it alone. Nonprofits cannot, and certainly our parents and providers cannot do it by themselves. We are asking for this very village to step up, lean in, and invest. What we are hearing clearly and consistently is that the system is stretched to its breaking point. 47% of childcare providers report that their monthly revenue does not cover their expenses, even after raising tuition in the past year. Despite those tuition increases, 58% of those providers are unsure if they'll even be open in 12 months, which represent a 10% increase from last year. In 2025, we were losing family childcare providers in our region at a faster rate than replacing them, creating childcare deserts right here in Franklin County and across our 7-county region. And families feel it immediately. For working parents in Central Ohio, childcare is often the single largest monthly expense, surpassing even housing costs. Our data shows that childcare consumes between 12 and 34% of a median household income, which is far exceeds the federal benchmark of affordability, which is just set at 7%. 42% of our providers say affording tuition and fees is the biggest challenge to retaining their families. According to our friends at Groundwork Ohio and United Way's ALICE data, on a survival budget, a family in Central Ohio with two working adults, an infant, and a preschooler would need to earn $86,904 annually to afford childcare. Their greatest expense, more than food or housing, would be childcare at $1,700 per month. No parent should have to choose between staying in the workforce and ensuring their child is well cared for. And yet, that is exactly the choice too many families are facing. All too often, it is women who leave the workforce. According to the new data from the Catalyst, more than 455,000 women left the U.S. workforce between January and August of 2025. In this national survey, women who left the workforce over the past year, 42% of them exited because of caregiving responsibilities, including the cost of childcare, as the strongest factor behind their decision to leave. Childcare is not a poor people's problem. It is not a personal problem for individual families to solve on their own. It is essential infrastructure. It's as critical as roads, broadband, or utilities. Without it, our workforce cannot function and our economy cannot grow. The good news is, solutions do exist. We know what works when we invest in providers, when we support families, and treat early care and education and as the public good that it is. I would like to give my thanks to those who are working to bring solutions to the table, including Governor Mike DeWine and the Department of Children and Youth. Jeff and Kara are here representing. They have centered children and families in our state budget. The Franklin County Board of Commissioners, and personally Commissioner Crawley, with the historic $34 million investment in Franklin County RISE, I think that deserves a round of applause. And that $34 million was over 4 years. We can do this. I want to also thank the United Way of Central Ohio Success by Third Grade initiative. You all get it. Nationwide Children's Hospital, Mary Kay, thank you. And, of course, our friends at Future Ready 5, Mario Basara. What is required now is the will to act across government, business, philanthropy, and our community's leadership. I look forward to exploring not just the challenges before us, but the shared responsibility and opportunity we have to build a stronger, more equitable childcare system for Central Ohio. With that, thank you for being here today. I will now turn the podium over to today's panel moderator, Jennifer Bullock.
Thank you so much, Tasha, and thank you all for being here today. What an incredible crowd to have, as Tasha called it, a crucial conversation. My role is to just facilitate and help to lead some of this discussion. I will admit that I'm under a little bit of pressure because my sister's boss is here today. So she's probably watching. I promise I won't embarrass you. But this is a conversation that, as Tasha mentioned, affects so many of us, whether we think it does or not. I'm a mom of two young children at home. Childcare has been a hot topic for us. My husband actually left the workforce in order to take care of our children over the last 8 years. And that's something that my family is very passionate about. And we determine the success of our communities based on the success of our youngest generation. So with that, let us start this conversation. You heard some of the statistics that Tasha mentioned, how many people are relying on childcare, have left the workforce because of they really can't afford it. But in addition to that, childcare facilities are struggling as well in terms of staffing and enrollment. So my first question, I want to address Dr. Catherine Applegate. Some of those statistics come from the recent Children's Central Ohio Care Childcare Provider Survey, which is now in its sixth year, a one-of-a-kind study. What is the single most important thing that this year's data tells us about the state of childcare in the Central Ohio community, and what surprised you the most about that?
I guess what I'd say for the most important part are two things. First, there's trends that we saw this is the seventh iteration that we've done this survey, and there are some things that we're seeing survey after survey after survey, and they're consistently a problem. We haven't made things better in some respects. There are respects where we have too, but we're seeing consistent problems that we still haven't resolved yet. So we know these problems exist. The data is there. What are we going to do about it? It's time to make a change. The other thing I think is really important to take away from this is that our childcare providers are tired. They are emotionally taxed. They are physically taxed. They are financially taxed. And they are feeling it every single day. In terms of what surprised me, I wouldn't say it exactly surprised me, but I think what's really notable is that even though these data show that 47% of our childcare providers are operating at a loss, their expenses are greater than the income they're building in, that's coming in, even though that is a primary concern, we still hear from a lot of providers who, like was shared, their greatest concern is being available to the community that they're trying to serve. They're concerned about, as their costs are increasing, are they still going to be able to provide that same high-quality care to children, even though everything is getting more expensive? You know, how are they going to be able to keep their teachers when they haven't had a raise in years? So I think what's really important to keep in mind is these teachers and professionals are taxed, they're tired, and they're still really working hard to do right by the kids and families they serve.
And Hannah, I saw you nodding along to some of the points that she was making. What are your thoughts when it comes to that?
Gosh, where do we start? First of all, the report's really excellent. Kudos to you, to the staff that put that together, put that out, and to the people who responded to those questions. I'm sure whenever that hits the old inbox, it's maybe low on the list of priorities if you're a childcare provider, but it's so important to capture what is actually happening on the ground. And at the top of my notes here, I have one number. 63% of respondents want to hire, and a majority needing to rehire for positions within the year. At the same time, the most frequently cited challenge to hiring is the ability to pay the wages, which are still far below what is in other sectors of Ohio, Central Ohio economy. And the other piece that I think this report made really clear is that at the same time that so many providers are struggling to pay competitive wages, are, as Dr. Katz said, not making ends meet, let alone being able to have the kind of profit that would help them grow and sustain their business, families can't afford it. Even with the wages being lower, owners not being able to get to stability, let alone like growth, people still can't afford it. So it makes it very clear to me that there's a big missing piece in this puzzle. And in Ohio, whenever we look at all of the contributions from philanthropy, from the nonprofit sector to corporations, to businesses trying to dig in, what we're seeing here locally in Franklin County, it becomes very clear to me that the missing piece is our state legislature and the ability to prioritize funding for the people who are providing the most basic and critical service in our economy.
And so I do want to stay on that topic of funding. I'm glad you brought that up. More than half of providers say they are unsure, as we've heard today, that they will be able to stay open within the next 12 months without additional support, whether from the public, the government, philanthropy, what have you. I'll open it up to whoever wants to answer first. But from your perspectives, what does that level of uncertainty mean, not just for the families, but for the employers and really our regional economy as well?
I'll jump in first. I think when we talk about affordability, I think it's important to recognize that this just isn't a low-income family issue. When you talk about the cost that parents are consuming, it's a middle-income issue, which means it can't just be government, it can't just be nonprofits, and it can't just be the community. It really does take all of us, including all of our state, federal, and local officials, to come together. Where we are excited when we talk about the commitments Governor DeWine has made is he has focused really early on around eligibility. We have to support more families. We have to expand eligibility. And the General Assembly, although didn't go to the full amount that the governor requested at 160% of the federal poverty level, did allow us to create a new program. So there are new resources for families called the Child Care Choice Voucher Program. He launched it in 2024. These are not the sole answer to any of these issues. Let me be very clear. But they are a step in the right direction. They do show tangible outcomes to kids and families, and they set the stage and the infrastructure for us to continue to build. Governor DeWine also recognized that this field is horribly underfunded. He has requested more money in each budget to support the providers. Since he took office in January of 2019, there have actually been 6 increases to provider rates. So you would say, Kara, that's great news. Well, the provider rates went up between 38 and 43% since 2019, and that sounds like a lot. But you have to couple that with cost of living went up about 29%, and we were already at a deficit. So it's a really hard conversation for people to understand such a jump because you don't see that across other industries, but we're not starting from the same foundation. So we have been consistently working to build, and I think that's, as an industry, as a community, and as stakeholders, something we need to continue to have the same messaging on. Because we were successful in the last biennial budget from the state, the General Assembly appropriated more than $400 million. To support kids and families. That sounds like a lot of money when you're talking about it as a two-year investment, but you have to really set the stage with where we started. So I just want to kind of keep center that this isn't a low income, it's a middle income, it's a community issue, and there have been steps in the right direction. It's just we have a bigger hole that we're digging out of.
And so go ahead.
And I I agree with Director Wente that there have been some steps to move the state forward. I think the governor's office has tried to lead in this area, and unfortunately, the state legislature hasn't taken his leadership and moved in it. And so just for some context, even with these increases that recently happened, Ohio is still in the bottom bucket for provider rates in the country. Even with these increases, which were necessary and hard fought, like, don't get me wrong, that wasn't easy to make those moves. We're still at the bottom of the country. We're in the bucket of 50 percentile of market rate, and those are the folks that are at the bottom. So whenever we're thinking about the state of childcare in Ohio, it really can't be separated from this systematized precarity that's at the heart of it. And while there have been lots of good efforts, many of those efforts have been in response to federal mandated increases in both the provider rates and to bring down co-pays. Those federal mandates are now under attack. Since this report came out, we've all seen the news. Those steps that helped Ohio get on the right track are now being rolled back at the federal level. Hopefully, we will see leadership continue from the last few days of the DeWine administration to secure those gains that were made, even without the federal mandates. That's the hope.
I can add to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely with what Director Wente said. We have made steps in the right direction. That's real progress. It's not where we need to be. It's not all the steps we need to take to get there, but we have made real steps. To that point about the survey, we heard from our respondents that 58% of them weren't sure if they were going to be open in the next 12 months. And if you imagine that, imagine if there was a survey of the banking industry or grocery stores, and we learned that 58% of them aren't sure if they're going to be open in a year. That's headline news right there. But that's where we are with childcare, and that's not a fresh statistic. That is the way they operate. So, and if we look at Franklin County only, right here, that number increases to 64%. So what I think we need to recognize is, one, those providers, that 64% of providers who are afraid they're going to close or at risk of closing here in Franklin County, that does not mean that all of them are going to close. So we need to hold on to that. That is, this is 64% of providers who feel uncertain. So some of them will close, others won't. But what that says is 64% are in survival mode. Those are 64% are not in a place to grow. I think of it like a garden. If you're starting a garden and you have old seeds and the soil is rocky and it doesn't get a lot of sun, you might think to yourself, I think there's a 64% chance that nothing's going to come up here. Then if something does come up, if those providers do stay open, good, that's good, but you're not going to win any prizes at the county fair for those vegetables or those flowers that you're growing there. And that is not the kind of environment that we need to be providing for children. They need a garden bed that is going to not just help them come up, but help them thrive.
Now, I do want to address a question for Rhonda. When we were talking about providers, we've heard about steps that we're taking toward kind of filling those gaps, filling those holes somewhat. But we're still seeing a lot of vulnerability, obviously, as we're hearing how many are at risk of closing these centers. With these lower margins, fewer families that are enrolling, some owners that truly aren't even paying themselves, they're not even taking a paycheck. What would it take for childcare, for family childcare to be treated as essentially a sustainable small business? What would it take?
Like most of them said, adding more money to childcare businesses. Like with me, I opened up two more shifts in my childcare to open up to keep me going, at least for another year. I don't know how it's going to work out, but that's what I did. But the parents, they come in, they do pay their co-pays without any complaining or anything else. But I just want to see them not to be struggling just to have childcare. I want them to want to pay for, you know, the childcare that they're receiving. And I'm trying to give them the best that they desire for their children.
Can I jump in? So I think it's important that we all recognize that provider payments are the primary way that we can very quickly increase investment. That is absolutely true. But government alone is not going to be able to sustain this, which is why there are a couple of other avenues I do want to share because they're not fully being utilized today. So one is one from the last budget that the General Assembly did put in. It was $10 million in the Child Care Cred program. So what that is if you've heard of the tri-share model where the business owner puts in 30%, the employee puts in 30%, and the state puts in 30%, it's similar. In Ohio, though, they did adjust it to 40-40-20. Right now, we have just over 100 children utilizing that program. We have spent less than $1 million in that space, and we've only had 17 employers that have been interested in coming to the table. And again, that is not the sole answer, but I think where we are trying to look across the board is we are consistently having conversations around provider reimbursements, which is why we have made that a focus of every biennial budget under Governor DeWine. But we are also working with our partners to look for other options like this Child Care Cred program. Additionally, we have what we call the public-private partnership, which has more flexibility than the Child Care Cred program, but is the same premise. Whereas businesses, when you have certain professionals that are in of a wage that's under 400%, 200%, you're not eligible for child care choice anymore. How can you support them differently? How can you bring more resources to the table? Because you can't pay the full freight of child care. That's the problem. It's expensive. But when you're looking at these programs and you're looking at 10, 20, 30, 40% of child care, that can range anywhere from $4,000 to $7,000 per person, depending on how many kids they have, where their children are. So I want to take a minute to level set on the fact that there is always more we can do in rates. And I think Governor DeWine has said in every budget that he is passionate about continuing to make improvements, and we have room to go. And the General Assembly has afforded those supports when we've moved those that work forward. But there's also other options. What you hear Rhonda talking about is the fact that she increased the number of children she's serving. She added shifts. We certainly understand that everyone's not in a position to do that, but we wanted to create the policy flexibility to allow that to happen. We know that kids and families bear the brunt of this if we don't figure it out. So I wanted to share that there's a couple of options as you're a nonprofit or you're an employer in the room. You may not know about the Child Care Cred program. You may not have known about the Business Partnership Program, but both of those are continuing through this state fiscal year. And into next for the business partnership, we just received $14.7 million from the federal government for a preschool development grant. And part of that funding is dedicated to these partnerships to better serve our kids, but to also help support our providers in making sure that these kids are there in a sustainable way. So wanted to throw out a couple of additional supports that we're trying to employ for our providers.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Child care is essential infrastructure for Central Ohio's economy. Today's conversation looks at new data and what it will take to stabilize and strengthen the child care industry for providers, parents, and kids. We are hearing from Dr. Catherine Glenn Applegate with Action for Children, Hannah Halbert of Policy Matters Ohio, Kara Wente with the Ohio Department of Children and Youth, and Rhonda West of Rhonda's Daycare Service. We also heard opening remarks by Tasha Booker of Action for Children. Your host is NBC4 anchor Jennifer Bullock. We'll be back with this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, The State of Child Care, after a short break.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured 3 times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week's topic, it's the state of childcare. Rising costs, workforce shortages, and limited access are putting pressure on families, employers, and the regional economy. We're digging into new research and what it might take to strengthen childcare in Central Ohio for providers, parents, and kids. Joining us today are Dr. Catherine Glenn Applegate, Director of Childcare and Education Initiatives at Action for Children, Hannah Halbert, Executive Director of Policy Matters Ohio, Kara Wente, Director of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth, and Rhonda West, owner and administrator of Rhonda's Daycare Service. Your host is NBC4 anchor Jennifer Bullock. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, The State of Childcare.
In Kentucky, there's a program where the state provided free childcare for childcare workers. So not owners, not administrators at childcare offices, but for people who are doing the work, doing 20 hours minimum of work in childcare. That program, I think that was 10, 15 million, something like that, thousands of spots opened up. Immediate stability to the child care hiring crisis. It brought people in to do the work, and it opened up spots. There's bills in the State House, both in the Senate and in the House, that would bring this program to Ohio, $20 million. That is a pittance whenever we look at the kinds of abatements, incentives, loopholes that are happening in other corporate or business sectors in this Ohio budget. So we could get that done. We could get that done this year, bring some stability, open up spots, give people who are child care providers, these small businesses, an additional incentive whenever they're trying to hire people. It's a real win-win, and it's had remarkable results just in the state to our south. So that's one piece of it. And it really is a situation. And I hear Director Wente, and I understand, like, the government dollar can't fix everything, right? We can start with that position. However, in states that are doing this better, there is a far more robust public investment happening than what we have seen here in Ohio. And I truly think the department has been up against the definition of rock in a hard place on this. And I think it's getting harder with all of this federal nonsense going on. But that's the key. It costs money to do this well, just like it costs money to have roads that function. And we have to invest through our tax code and our budget spending to make it run well for our kids.
All right. And so for timing purposes, it's hard to believe, but we have one more question we're going to ask. And I will address each of you with this question. But before we get to that, it is CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. So we're going to have questions from our live stream audience and in person once we answer that final question. So if you do have a question, you can make your way over to the microphone where you see Doug waving there and just line up behind him. If you're joining us on YouTube, type your questions into the chat. But again, as I mentioned, before we get to that portion, one final question that I would like for all of you to briefly answer. We're going to look forward a little bit because we could deep dive, really deep dive into so much of this topic. If we reconvene this group in 2028, we'll say that, what would success look like and what would failure look like for overall Central Ohio's childcare system? So we'll start with Dr. Applegate.
I think what we really need to see to ensure that we have that kind of success is, yes, dollars, but that has to be sustained. We've had too many instances where there's one-off funding. Here's hero pay. Here is hiring bonuses. Those are great. Those are good and valuable. We need sustained investment. We can't make real change when we have funding that's going to last a year and then we don't know. We can't get to a place where we can thrive and plan for the future. So what I would like to see is sustained investment.
Well, I think failure will be having the same conversation. If we're treading water in a couple of years, we've lost, right? And the we here is businesses who depend on workers, which is all of them, I think. Kids who Ohio's, 31st in terms of child well-being, and the providers, all of us, right? We will be behind as a state and as a community. Winning, I think, my goodness, if we could get some of our indicators to like a middle of the road style program here in Ohio, like just up from the bottom, would go a long way. But we can do better than that. We should have real investment. We should have programs like TriShare and also the WIN Act, the Free Childcare for Childcare Workers Bill. We should have supports for providers so that, you know, whenever there are instances or questions like we've seen so much in the news that are built on fabrications and fear of fraud, or if there's an issue going on that needs corrected, that there's some kind of notice peer review program, that there's real accountability there. I think that's broadly supported among providers. Like, there's so many things that we can move ahead on. Staying in the same place, if we're doing this again in 2 years, we've lost the game.
I think the primary focus of all of this is, we talk a lot about the money, but really I'm going to shift it to the kids and families. In 2 years, if kids and families have access to the childcare they need when they need it, and they can afford it, and they're not making the tough decision, we win. We all win, whether they're our kids or someone else's kids. We often get bogged down in the dollars and the solutions not being exactly where, when, and how we want them. But ultimately, what everyone always agrees on is that they care about kids. How they want to fund it is drastically different, and we have to continue to bring that message back to kids and families to get them to understand why it's so important. If we can do that in the next 2 years, I think the money will follow. I have to believe that as a system.
And Rhonda, as a provider, what's your perspective?
That parents have lower co-pays. They shouldn't have to want to pay, you know, have childcare to pay and then toss it between a bill or not. I think they should have no co-pays really at all.
All right, panelists, thank you so much. Now I do want to turn it over to Doug Buchanan, who is curating our questions from our live stream audience. For those of us, again, here in person, if you have a question, you can join Doug behind the microphone. So Doug, what is our first question?
Jennifer, thank you so much. Thank you so much to today's panelists for a great conversation. As a parent myself, I appreciate it. If you have a question for today's fantastic panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. If you're watching online, please type your question in the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a few seconds. And what punctuation mark does a question always end with?
not an exclamation point. They end with a question mark. Thank you very much. I'm going to launch us off with this one for Rhonda. Rhonda, can you share with us, what is your biggest day-to-day challenge as a daycare operator?
I'm doing everything alone because I'm the everything, the administrator, the CEO, the transportation, the after-school program. I'm everything, cook. And that's the biggest challenge. I'm trying to spread all of these things around to the children I love.
All right, we have another question.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mario Basora. I'm the CEO of Future Ready 5, and I have a question for the whole panel. So I'm wondering, what lessons do we have to learn from two things? The social impact bonds work out of Salt Lake City, Utah, which showed incredible growth and progress by funding childcare universally for a number of kids there. And then secondly, from the Southern surge, if you will, that a lot of folks are not getting enough talk about. But believe it or not, folks, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, those states are showing tremendous progress nationally on educational progress and have shown significant growth by putting a radical investment in early childhood education, selling it as a significant economic boom for the community and the states there. And there's all three of these communities have in common that they're conservative communities, and yet they have the ability to get that done in our country. So what advice or learnings do you all have that you can share with this group around that? They're hopeful models. Thank you.
Sure, I'll start. So I think when we look at other communities, we always have a lot to learn from how they have put their programs together. And universal childcare and expansion of childcare are always topics of conversation. We have fought really hard to expand our eligibility for publicly funded childcare from originally it was at like 125% up to 145%, now with childcare choice up to 200%. So to jump to universal childcare, when we talk about money, it's that fight between balancing when do you expand eligibility to more kids and where do you put that money into provider rates? Because you got to do both. Because if you can't have providers serving these kids, then you can't expand eligibility. So I think it's a delicate balance that we have to have a real conversation about, around how much money do we think we can request, and then where does each go from an eligibility versus a rate standpoint. I also think something that is really a struggle in early care and education as a whole is talking about our successes. We have a lot of great data. That's why it's good that Action for Children grounds us in data. We talk about data all the time at the department. We know that when kids have early care and education experience, they are twice as likely to start school demonstrating on the kindergarten readiness assessment. We have to lead with that. If we know that these programs work, then we have to fight to get our kids in more services and to expand access. Around the investment, I think that's something that we just have to continue to have conversations. We are not all on the same page as to where the money needs to go and how much goes in each individual bucket, but we have a biennial budget coming up. So the great news is we always have another opportunity very close behind.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's lots of different levers that we could pull. And I would suggest that New Mexico also be on people's Google search after this program if you're looking for examples of how other states have come at this problem and made that radical investment. And, you know, one of the ways that they did it was through the ballot initiative that set aside a percentage of a permanent fund to childcare, and they are on the path to universal free childcare in that state. That's right. That's right. And it passed by 70%, right? This is a popular idea, a popular program. And so, you know, whenever we're thinking about the kinds of funding, the amount of funding that an agency like Director Wendy's agency needs to be able to do to make those kinds of radical leaps that are necessary right now, if we're going to get ahead of this thing, you got to kind of look through these out-of-the-box ideas, and New Mexico is sort of leading the way. Alaska is doing eligibility as a percentage of median income and not poverty. They just made this $6 million investment, lot smaller population up there than we are, but there are places that we could borrow from that would really move us ahead.
Let's take another question.
Thank you. We have about 7 minutes left, and we'll try to get to at least three more questions. This question, could businesses provide, or what would it take for businesses to provide childcare as a required benefit to their employees, like insurance benefits are?
I can take that one on. So I think that is, as Director Wente has said, this is not a problem that government alone can solve. It's certainly not a problem that individual families can solve. There's another beneficiary of childcare in there, and that's those employers who rely on their employees coming to work. So I think it could be a really great step through that childcare cred program, the business partnerships program, if employers also say, you know what, we're going to give you a salary, we're going to give you health insurance, and here's your childcare benefit too. So I think that's a really strong opportunity for folks to step up and do. I think the real problem is that it's a big mental shift that we start thinking about childcare as a collective investment rather than someone else's problem. There's, you know, the pervasive thinking, well, you shouldn't have had kids if you weren't going to be able to take care of them. We hear that far too often. That just doesn't match the reality that we all operate in today. The vast majority of families need all parents available to work. So if employers need those employees, that is a good way to step up. So you can come at it from this is a charity, this is a community support that we are offering, or you can come at it from an economic perspective of this is how we're going to get our work done. Either way, the answer comes back to childcare.
I have to add two things to that, that if there are employers that are interested in looking at supporting childcare, please reach out to the Department of Children and Youth, go to our website. We actually have two opportunities, childcare cred and this public-private partnership, the business partnership that we want to leverage and we want to be creative. So reach out to us. Let's talk through it because there could be options.
The worst thing you could do is say no, right? All right, let's take an in-person question.
Sure. So we cut childcare funding when we remove pay based on enrollment, removal of part-time and full-time dollars, and we remove type A funding. What is the plan to get money to these businesses?
So I know what you're talking about. This is a change that was made at the end of the last budget by the Ohio General Assembly. However, it was made at the same time our market rate payments did increase. What that means is when we no longer are moving to pay on enrollment or to pay with co-pays, to reduce co-pays, that was slotted for state fiscal year 27. So we know that there was about $70 million in enrollment and about $20 million in co-pays that was slotted for that budget. What we are having conversations around now is what does that look like going forward? What we are facing, and we don't like to talk about this a lot, but we already knew we had a hole in the state fiscal year 28 and 29 budget in childcare. To level set, childcare is about $1 billion a year in the state of Ohio. We serve about 100,000 kids every day in publicly funded childcare, and it's still not enough. And knowing that we had that hole going into 28 and 29, the conversations now have to center around, we have providers at risk of closing. We're hearing the data around, you know, more than 60% don't know if they're going to be here in 12 months. And those are conversations that have to happen today, and they are. Do I have the final answer on where that funding is going to go and how is it going to work? I don't, but I can tell you it's top of mind for the General Assembly, the governor, and all of us that are working in that space.
And I would love to see Ohio show some leadership and a little bit of bravery and actually move forward with implementing those changes, even despite what's going with the federal mandate being taken off the table. They could still do those things. If they were good ideas before, they're still good ideas. And this enrollment versus attendance question, it's getting a lot of myth building around it. But all that is aligning how the public sector childcare, how the funding happens in that world with how funding and tuition is paid in the private market. When you pay your tuition at a private pay place, you're paying for a week or a month ahead. You're paying for that spot, based on attendance. If you take your kid on vacation, well, you just paid for the week. Sorry, that's how it works, right? That creates stability. It allows people to plan. It is necessary to have a functional, it is not a surprise at all that people are like, I have no idea if I will be here. Whenever you can't make a plan to even have a spot. So that rule change, I would love if Ohio just said, you know what? This was a good decision before when it was mandated. We're still going to move it. The money has been allocated in the budget. We could do a 7% copay cap. It was a good decision before. It's a good decision now. The money has been allocated. I hope that they just plow through. And then God, you all should get your hymnal and sing me off this. I'm so sorry. I know it's rude. But look, Ohio has money. We act as if we are in a state where we're just broke all the time. And we're going to have big budget holes coming up from all this stuff happening at the federal level in health, in food security, in education, and in childcare. And we're like, my goodness, how do we fill these holes? Well, let me tell you, Ohio passed a flat tax last budget that's going to take $1.68 billion out of the kitty over this biennium. The majority of that tax cut is going to people who are in the top 1%. We're talking about people on average who are earning $1 million. I'm pretty sure they don't need that tax cut. We do need a functional child care system, just like we need functional roads and bridges and, my goodness, utilities, you name it. So we can do this. Ohio could actually solve this problem. The money exists, the policies, we know them. We can pick from the best. We need the political will to make it happen. That's it.
All right. Thank you so much for that. I wish we had more time. I really do, but I'm getting the wrap-up signal. So we're going to turn it over to Commissioner Erica Crawley with today's sponsor, the Franklin County Board of Commissioners, for concluding remarks.
Thank you, Jennifer. As we close, I want to step back and talk about why this conversation matters beyond this room. This past summer, I traveled to Reggio Emilia, Italy, a city that, after war, hardship, and loss, made a deliberate choice to rebuild by investing in its children. Their guiding question was simple: how are the children? Similarly, the Maasai warriors of the African tribe of Kenya have a traditional greeting, Kasirian and Gera, which translates to, and how are the children? That question carries responsibility. It recognizes that the health of a society is inseparable from the well-being of its children. This study that we talked about today asked that same question here in Central Ohio. It tells us how our children are doing. It tells us how the people we trust to care for them are doing. And it tells us clearly that the system is under strain. Nearly 1 in 6 childcare providers in our region are unsure they'll remain open in the coming months. Nearly half of are operating at a loss. Those are not abstract numbers. They are warning signs. When systems fail, the burden doesn't disappear. It shifts to families, to workers, to employers, and eventually to all of us. I don't speak about this only as a policymaker. I speak about it as someone who has lived it. And that experience shapes how I govern. Childcare is not a private luxury. It is a public infrastructure, as you have heard over and over again. When it works, our economy moves. When it breaks, everything breaks down. Today, that commitment is being tested. As recovery dollars expire and public investment pulls back, families pay the price. Parents are pushed out of the workforce, children miss early learning opportunities, and the costs show up later in crisis systems and public dollars spent reacting instead of investing. This is not just an economic issue, it's a moral one. But we are not powerless. We have agency. We can choose leadership over hesitation. We can choose investment over neglect. And we can keep asking the question that matters most: how are the children? That question belongs to all of us, policymakers, employers, philanthropists, and civic leaders. I believe we can do better. We can ensure early educators earn a living wage. We can ensure children have a safe, high-quality place to learn. And we can build a future where a child's potential is not limited by zip code or income. That is the future that I am committed to choosing for Franklin County. And as we leave today, I hope we carry forward that same question that guided Reggio Emilia in rebuilding. How are our children? And what are we prepared to do about it?
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we examine the state of childcare, rising costs, workforce shortages, and limited access are straining families, employers, and the regional economy. We explored new research and looked at what it might take to strengthen childcare in Central Ohio. Our panelists were Dr. Catherine Glenn Applegate of Action for Children, Hannah Halbert of Policy Matters Ohio, Kara Winty of the Ohio Department of Children and Youth, and Rhonda West of Rhonda's Daycare Service. We heard opening remarks from Tasha Booker, CEO of Action for Children, and closing remarks by Franklin County Commissioner Erica Crawley. Your host was Jennifer Bullock, anchor at NBC4. This forum was sponsored by the Care Economy Organizing Project, the Franklin County Board of Commissioners, Millard Consulting, PNC, and the United Way of Central Ohio. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading The Daycare Myth by Dan Wuari. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I hope you'll join us. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.